It's the first Thursday of the month. Time for the inner game here on KDNK. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for being here. The inner game is the relationship we have to our authentic purpose and contribution in life. It's about the ways that we grow personally and spiritually on the inside that affects everything on the outside of our lives. The quality of our inner game is becoming increasingly important because we now know that the world shifts to reflect whatever is inside us. Each of our contributions is critical to the quality of what is possible for us all on the planet. These are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives, and an opportunity to hear about how these people take on their spiritual and personal growth and how that strengthens their organizations and businesses to make a bigger difference. Our guest today is Aaron Taylor, director of the Way of Compassion Foundation in Carbondale, which is now also the umbrella organization for the Bike Project, which keeps more bikes out of the landfill and in the hands of bikers, young and old. So thank you so much for being here, Aaron.
Thanks, Gwen. As you were doing the introduction there, I thought, I better go get the guy or gal who's fitting that description.
I know. We don't, you know, often think of ourselves as in those terms. I know, especially the people who are really taking on, you know, their greater awareness and growth. A lot of humility, hopefully, usually comes with that. And that I tend to see that in people, you know, you start to not think of yourself as fully formed because you're always sort of a work in progress, right?
I start to see the reality. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, that's good.
You know, well, tell us a little bit about the Way of Compassion Foundation, maybe a little mission or thumbnail for people who aren't familiar with it.
Yeah, so the Way of Compassion Foundation was started by John Bruna. And it was, so John Bruna is a local who moved here recently back in 2012, I think. And he had been a monastic for about 6 years in a Tibetan Buddhist community. And he was coming back in as a lay life practitioner and decided to start a nonprofit. It started with the idea of offering a way for people to engage in compassionate action and offering tools and resources for that. So compassion being defined as removal of suffering from self and others and the world around you. So it's really anything that achieves that mission statement is something we're involved in, whether it be workshops, courses, programs, or hosting projects like the Bicycle Project or Compassion Fest, which we might get into a little bit. There's also some international programs that are umbrellaed by the nonprofit as well.
Beautiful. And I know biking has been a big part of your life for a long time, and you started the Bike Project. When did that start?
That started in 2009. Well, okay. Yeah, technically, I started calling it something in 2009.
Right, you're just kind of doing it before that.
Yeah, we did a community bike fleet for the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies up in Hallam Lake. And that was the first fleet I had really built as far as there's naturalists that come in every year, and I was looking for a way for them to have transportation. So that was the first fleet. Then I moved down to Carbondale, was continually inspired to do something, and ended up working in a parking lot behind Backdoor Consignment Store where Monk and Marie were. They would host me, and they were so nice. They give me pizza every once in a while.
Yeah. You know, the love just spreads, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Inspires
like
more. And tell me how that has changed for you in terms of it showing up as a compassionate act. I mean, I'm sure that's always what it felt like. You're just a sort of a compassionate person. But how has that shifted in your awareness of you know, how the Bike Project serves?
I think for me, the compassion grows, you know, so it's something that we can all practice.
Right.
It's not, it is something I feel is within us, you know, and we can uncover it, but it's something we need to practice too. So for me, it's been a practice all along. And oftentimes in the early days, I would often struggle in between, oh, should I go on a bike ride today? And I'd feel pulled away from that if I was going to do the community bike program often, like I wasn't being nourished myself.
Right.
And that was where I was at then. And then as I continued to work, I recognized that the nourishment was coming from it. So I was actually with a shift in mindset and recognizing this idea of what cultivating our own happiness from our own activities, our own acting in alignment with our values, I started to recognize that's actually where I was getting a lot of my energy, just like I was today. I just came from the bike project and was working with friends who were really trying to improve themselves in many ways. Mm. And so it was really great to see.
I know that when you take on greater practice of awareness and kindness and any kind of personal growth in your life, it starts to kind of bring up some of the things that you don't often like to look at about yourself. And that can show up as kind of a difficult thing. And you're just like, oh, why is this so hard? You know, maybe this practice isn't for me. Tell us a little bit about what that's been like for you. So maybe others can, you know, see parts of their own, you know, can empathize a bit.
Yeah. So I do have a regular meditation practice. I was introduced to kind of a broadening approach of cultivating genuine happiness and acting in alignment with values, as well as adding a concentration meditation practice. And that was done through the Mindful Life program that John Bruna and Laura Bartels taught in 2014. Mm-hmm. And one of the important pieces of information I have received from different teachers is during authentic practice, meaning you're following a teacher who really has the best intentions for you, has correct knowledge, is teaching it in an appropriate way. Through authentic practice, like you say, you actually can encounter dredging your own psyche in a way. So you actually experience. Mm-hmm. I actually recognize that a lot of the things that were difficult were because I was creating that. So,
right.
So that is important to know that for me, I did go through a phase of many phases and continue to go through phases
sure.
of that kind of bringing up of things that I need to recognize, look at more closely to be able to more appropriately act in the world. So, yeah, it's not easy, right? It's we call it in the Mindful Life program, we call it cultivation of genuine happiness because it's a good marketing tool. You know, it sounds better
happiness.
Than saying
happiness is good.
Sounds better than saying, yeah, look at your ethics.
Come look at your all
Come
your dark
your
stuff
ethics.
That
yeah.
is getting in the way in your life.
Yeah, and really reassess, you know, the activities that you're engaging in and are they providing you with the what you're looking for? And
right.
so, yeah, I've come across some of that and I'm sure there's lots of similar stories out there. But
do you find that it gets easier over time because now you know that on the other side of every sort of challenging, tough thing that you have to sort of take on or look at in yourself, there's greater freedom, greater happiness, greater ability to serve, so that it gets a little easier when you find yourself in a bumpy period that you know that, okay, I'm just going to stay with this. Be with it, keep showing up for it, keep doing the practices. And on the other side, I know there's always greater expansion, greater evolution, because that's how it works.
Yeah, for me, I don't think it gets any easier, you know, but the important thing.
Even the knowledge of that.
Even the knowledge,
okay.
I think in the moment, and I can speak from recent experience 2 days ago. So it's recent enough that I think I can say it didn't feel easier.
Mm-hmm.
It was just as unpleasant. So I was going through a time of feeling irritation and anger coming up in me, just like
sure.
Bubbling up. And what I did notice and is important to notice is that those events, if one way to kind of look at progress is looking at, is the duration less? So is it shorter in duration? And is the intensity less?
Mm-hmm.
So looking at those things, I can look back 5 years and say, yeah, that actually is true for that event. So I was actually able to apply antidotes to take a little additional time for practice to look clearly at the situation with all of that, with a little bit more wisdom and compassion, self-compassion, and also wisdom. You actually can view that the event has a shorter duration and then also is less intense. Now, the unpleasant factor, I was still very displeased with the whole experience. I mean, when has anybody felt anger and liked it? And
right.
that's why it's really interesting to think about. There's often a real direct argument towards compassion in action and say, isn't there really some times for having like a verified source of anger? Like there's situations
right.
that are traumatic in the world and they really need
that
to
require
be, yeah.
some anger.
They need response. And
yes.
there's often thought, well, isn't that a validated source to have anger at that? And my response to that is, there's nothing out there in the world that can validate me injuring myself, because every time I have anger, it feels bad. Mm. And it doesn't bring up my best actions. It doesn't bring up my best response. And compassion, in fact, is a force, is a fuel, not to be confused with empathy. And so it actually can have same action, but out of a place of compassion versus anger, becomes more effective, more powerful.
Do you find that now they can actually measure that? It's amazing what science can now measure.
Yeah.
It can now measure that meditation increases our access to compassion in any form. Do you find that you can access more self-compassion even in these difficult times? Is that something that's increased?
Yeah, and I think for me, this last event, what happened was I started to apply the wisdom component of what am I looking at here? Because in the past, I would look at a situation that I would say caused me to be anger. And in this case, speaking from kind of a Buddhist perspective, those are causes and conditions, but they're not the primary cause and condition. They're cooperative.
Right.
So they're conditions that it arose within those conditions, but the real cause is my having planted the seed of anger and irritation in the past. So I'm experiencing the results of my past actions. And just even simply looking at a term in habits and tendencies, we look at the way we get in habits, we get in tendencies, and we just perpetuate those.
Right.
And oftentimes those are those bad habits that cause us kind of continually to do things that we feel bad about after we're done. So in this case, the wisdom component, I actually turned and said, really, there's no one I can blame out there. There's no situation I can blame. So with a little bit of exploration into wisdom, I wasn't looking to change the outside world when I got irritated or angry, where historically that's what I do. How can I change things?
Right.
You know, how can I
get... Something's wrong.
Yeah. How can I get a new living situation, or how can I find a new town to live in, or how can I go find a new activity? This isn't working anymore. The reversal, and why I think it was a shorter duration of
being
in these mentally afflicted states, was that I looked at the wisdom component and said, really what's happening here is these things are arising and I need to be with them and practice an antidote, which is patience. So the antidote to anger is patience.
Mm-hmm.
So I practiced patience and fortitude, tried not to throw gasoline on the fire, let it come and go. And then, you know, practicing thinking about loving kindness as well is something that can help. But
if you ever have kids, that's going to be so helpful, Aaron.
So... Yeah, we'll see about that. No comment.
So just to let you all know, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KD&K. My guest is Aaron Taylor, and we're talking about the way we always do on The Inner Game, how our cultivation of peace and greater skill on the inside affects our experience and ability to be of greater service in the world and greater vessel for compassion and love and evolution. And I always like to ask people, what is a skill or behavior you've developed or are developing that's, and I know we've been sort of talking about this, that's making a difference in how you are serving at the Way of Compassion Foundation?
So one of the recent things that first comes to my mind is thinking about the things that I think are getting in the way of my practice. So feeling a little history here. So I've very recently been introduced to meditation as something that you can do.
Right.
You know.
You were in your early 30s, so just a few years
ago. Yeah. So about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And so then I recognized that I had taken my desire and attachments to other things, bicycle rides and any number of things, that chocolate cake. I love chocolate cake.
Me too.
These things. And I had taken those attachments to those things and simply applied it to meditation. Oh, I love the calm of meditation.
Right.
I love the experience of meditation. And then it became this whole thing. Well, what if I don't get my meditation practice? And what if I can't go? And oh, now I can't go. I've got to help somebody out. And now I can't go meditate. It became this whole thing that was a struggle.
Yep.
So from that perspective, what I've been looking at. So that was my desire was to be on, you know, doing meditation practice and really cultivating inner qualities. But there's a lot of things that get in the way of that, right?
So, life.
Well, this whole life thing. So what I've started to take on board, and this is something John Bruna had said sometime. He said, the things that you think are getting in the way of your path are not getting in the way of their path. Mm-hmm. They are the path. You go directly for them. So yeah. I've actually looked at that, and over the last 6 months, that's how I've begun to live my life. So mm-hmm. that skill right there makes a lot of sense, hindsight, mm-hmm. as far as diving headfirst into the things that are I'm adverse to or the things that I think are getting in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That deep acceptance, you know, that there's learning and there's ability to practice with whatever circumstances you get.
Absolutely. Yeah, bring the right mindset forward, right?
Right.
Everything becomes practice.
And absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, you, one of the things that that you were telling me about were, you know, just your transition, some of the things that you've let go of in your life. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the things that, like being a musician, that you've let drop away so that you can do what you're being called to do right now in your life.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, being called to do something that was really of interest of mine, of where I wanted to spend time. And originally, I had a full plate. Mm. So what I needed to, I looked at it kind of like a Thanksgiving plate of food, and I knew I had to take something off in order to fit something else in.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of my really logical mind thinking about, well, I do need to make space for this because it's important for me. And so the period of transition over many activities began, and I think about the Jetsuma Tenzin Palmo once talked about this idea of renunciation. And renunciation is not something of restriction, actually. It's more of a freedom. So it's giving you freedom. So monastics, you take vows and are taking vows to not do this and not do that and not do this. Really, it's a source of freedom, because what's happening is you're simplifying your life, and you're actually over time presented with more freedom. And I say that only in the way that activities have been like that for me. So to focus in more on the things that are important, the other things that were like Jetsuma Tenzin Palmo says, it's like a teddy bear. You know, when we're kids, we really love that teddy bear, and we need to take it everywhere. We take it over to the kitchen. We take it to when we have food, and it serves us very well. It's something comforting. But at some point we decide, well, we can leave it in the bedroom, and we don't really want to take it to the breakfast table, but we still need it at night, you know, really helpful at night. And then slowly, these things just fade away. They just simply don't become desirable anymore, something that we even consider to take with us. And that is a healthy way of, for me, that's been a really healthy way to have renunciation as far as that idea.
Right.
And more of simplification, I would say, in mm-hmm. this case.
Is it kind of an experiment, too, to kind of see what it's like without that in your life? Just to kind of play with the, is there desire there still or not? Or what's it like without this? And is it a bit of an adventure?
I think it's all a grand experiment. So, yeah. But and I think you're bringing up the idea of at different times I've taken different approaches as far as simply this gentle approach of letting things kind of float away but at the same time, those things that were so important for me serve their purpose to get me to where I am.
Sure. And
are very important stepping stones, mm-hmm. just like what I'm experiencing now is a stepping stone forever, wherever I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
But also at the same moment, when things are being let go of, things that are very important, there's also this inswelling of other contentment around these other activities that I'm engaging in. So the meditation practice, the study, all of that was coming in to really offer me the smooth kind of flow. So it never felt like it was being torn out. However, the music was more difficult because others are involved and others' feelings are involved.
Right.
And, you know, I really wanted to, what I decided was that I was going to take this path, and in order to, I had to break up essentially with like four bands, and it was hard. It was like breaking up with people, you know, saying that I'm just simply not going to do this activity anymore for the foreseeable future. And so it was difficult.
Yeah.
But again, one of those things, not an impediment mm-hmm. to the path, simply a way to go through and to really learn how to deal with those things in a compassionate, healthy way and do the best I can in those circumstances. But looking back from where I am now, I have been able to find this contentment, this peace that I've been searching for through practice, though it continues to fluctuate, of course.
Sure.
Just like last night at the Dharma Center, we had Venerable Gyaltan Sampton, and she said she had a teacher. She's a teacher who teaches from India mm-hmm. for us. And she said, one of her teachers said, "How are you feeling today? You look like you're sad." She said, "Yeah, I don't feel very good. I'm sad." She said, and her teacher said, "Don't worry, it'll go away." And then she came in 2 weeks later and he said, "How are you feeling today? You look so happy. You look wonderful." "Yes, I'm feeling very happy," she says. And he says,
Don't worry, it'll go away.
Yeah. Like, yeah, don't worry.
Yep. You don't get attached. I've had several meditation teachers in my life, and one that I've been doing some work with recently said meditation is not about trying to create a specific state. You know, that's just another thing to get attached to. It's just a practice. And then you see what shows up in your life, you know. And those things that we talked about tend to show up, like greater resilience, greater emotional resilience, greater threshold for stress, and staying in what you might call a negative state, you know, shorter time, shorter duration, mm-hmm. like you were talking about. Those things tend to show up, but you don't do the practice to cause that. You're not trying to look for a specific state. You just do the practice.
Yeah, to me, it would almost be those are byproducts, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, and yeah. it's the motivation's really important. Yeah,
what's the motivation for you, Aaron Taylor?
I'm just trying to be a better guy.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's beautiful. Yeah. That's a big motivation. I mean, I think that's probably, you know, a lot of people just want to be as good a person as they can be.
Yeah,
And there's actually a way that you can practice doing that. Tell us what your practice actually looks like. A little bit, a little snapshot. Not the whole thing, but.
Right, yeah. Because we'd be here for hours.
I know.
No, just kidding. Mine's actually, so being rooted in a foundation of this idea of the Mindful Life program, that's where I first got tools and resources to use. Mm-hmm. And the meditations that I do are focused in attention. So trying to focus the mind. And it's also known as shamatha meditation, which is also known as calm abiding. And the concept here is if you have only 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 5 minutes in a day to devote to meditation practice and you're inspired to do so, how do you best spend that time to actually fuel up for the rest of your day? And one of our largest obstacles to having a balanced life and is the busy mind. So, and often in modernity, we just have a busy mind more and more so.
Sure. So much stimulation.
Yeah. And this meditation was being taught, 3,000 years ago as antidotes to busy mind when we're talking about yak herders, you know.
Right.
So now we look at our pace of life, you can see attention is key.
Right.
So my meditation practice is focused on bringing a mind that's more attentive, more focused. So when I engage in my daily practice, which is all day long, I can actually attend to those things and cultivate the wisdom and the focused on values and looking at cultivating genuine happiness. So my path has been, path hasn't been important for me with the idea of walking down a path that there's irreversible change. So you're not kind of wandering in circles. You know what you're doing, you know why you're doing it. When you get somewhere, you look back over 5 years, 10 years, or for me, it's been about, you know, four. You look back and simply, I'm not going back to the things that I was doing, to the type of activities I was engaging in.
Sure.
Because I've seen that it is so much better. Now, why would I compromise my own happiness for this short-term pleasure, whatever it is? Mm-hmm. And so those are the type of things, idea of path.
Beautiful.
So the path that I've been on is focused in attention, but also bringing to mind the daily activities of checking in for skillful, unskillful actions. How am I acting? At the end of the day, looking back, saying, how can I transform some of those unskillful actions? Setting my intention and motivation for the next day to do the same. So it's a continual progress of how do you shift slowly. It's like turning the Titanic. Mm. You know, it's not a quick 180.
Right.
Really slow.
Got to find the trim tab, the little tiny trim rudder on the back of the big rudder that you have some power over, right?
Yeah.
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 Beautiful. That's a great place to end. Thank you so much, Aaron,
welcome,
for being with us today.
Thanks for this radio show. This is lovely.
It's really fun to have this conversation. Thank you all for listening today. If you have a question for Aaron or me, please join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. The page acts as a forum to continue these conversations, and you can find out where to listen to the past shows. So until next time, we'll leave you with Aaron's word for the next month that he's practicing. Be fearless.
Ah, fearlessness.